Hello, everyone, and welcome to BXB's Bits and Bobs, episode 31. This is the Destiny show. There's no doubt about that. We are going to be talking about so much Destiny 2. Before I even introduce people, I'm going to throw this out there right at the top here. I don't know how you guys feel, Richard and Joel, who are, of course, with me today. But I'm feeling like some spoilers. I don't know where you guys are at, Destiny. We'll talk about that. And if, you know, you don't want me to say anything specific, I'll avoid certain things. But not just for that, I would also quite like to spoil Game of Thrones Season 7. So if we're cool with that, I wanted to put those warnings out at the top of the show so that you guys are ready, especially with the Destiny stuff. All right, so where are you guys at in Destiny? Have you finished it?
No, I've not done the campaign yet. I've not finished it. I've just rescued Cade, and I am at the level cap. So getting there. I think I'm a little way behind you, though.
I know Joel's a long way
off. I'm merely sort of made it to the second world. I'm only level 9 at the moment. I've only had
But the question is, Joel, do you care?
I think there's certain aspects of the story that are probably very obvious. I don't know if there are any twists or as it develops that may interest me, but obviously you can tell from anyone who's seen the initial trailer or played the beta would already know that there's sort of this aspect of a lot of familiar characters are missing, and that obviously your first steps are going to be going around trying to find out in the aftermath of this attack on the tower what happened to all these characters. So I think there's certain bits of the story that are going to be obvious. And to be honest, I imagine any big fan of Destiny has probably already played it excessively more than I have anyway.
Well, I've had 2 days to play it, and in that time, I fucking hammered it. Yesterday was basically all I did. But we'll come back to Destiny shortly. Let's catch up on where everybody's at this week. I mean, I'll admit, hands up, I have been super, super busy with other stuff. My mind has been in other places with job interviews and meetings and all kinds of things like that. A lot of travel for me, which is a rarity in what I do. So I haven't been playing nearly as many games as I would have done in the last couple of weeks, which is why you might have also seen the site's been a bit quiet. There's not been a lot of updates between actually this episode of the podcast and the last one. I think we only had one piece of content go up, which was Joel's review. So, you know, that's partly my fault, and I apologize for that. But trust me, it's going to get a lot busier. This season of games is on its way properly. So how have you guys been in the last couple of weeks? Have you been up to anything fun? I haven't really talked to either of you that much or even like played any games with you guys because I've been so busy. So how you doing, Rich? How you doing, Joel?
Do you want to go first, Joel?
Yeah, I guess what's happened to me over the past couple of weeks. So it was my son's third birthday yesterday. Woo! So it's been a lot of woohoo. Yeah, I know, big celebration, you know, build up to that, lots of present organization, party organization and things. So yeah, that's been a big factor in why I haven't really had a much chance to do anything. The only other real thing that I've done is me and the wife sat down and watched the entire first series of 13 Reasons Why. Well, it's the only series of it at present. So I don't know if either of you guys have seen that.
I have seen it. I enjoyed it. It's not the sort of thing I should enjoy. It's a bit MTV-ish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
In the way it's sold, but... Yeah, I'm not a teenage girl, and I still liked it somehow.
Yeah, so I can echo those sentiments. It's very... Just here, it's very sad. It tells the story of a girl who's committed suicide. So a high school student who's committed suicide, and she's left behind these tapes that sort of telling her story about why she did it. And the 30, she's left behind, 13 tapes essentially. And each episode is, as one of the other characters in the series, is listening to these tapes and seeing how this whole story unfolded and how she ended up at the point of suicide and things like this. So that's the story it tells. It's very sad in places. I found some certain episodes I didn't quite enjoy the pacing of. I guess it was just felt a bit slow and draggy, but overall I was quite enjoyed the series in its entirety.
It's one of the main reasons
formula, isn't it? It builds up that formula. This is it 30, it's over 13 episodes, isn't it, and each episode is one of the reasons.
Can I just ask a question? Is one of the reasons she may have topped herself because she's one of the kind of twatty hipster wankers that would record 13 tapes of something as a suicide note? Because that's ridiculous. Like, oh my God, how long did you plan this? How much effort did you put into killing yourself, you fucking drama queen? Jesus Christ. That you're going to do it, the, just fuck off. God damn it. Walk into the sea
the
or something.
The discussion around this show is partly that, is how much attention does this give to people who are considering suicide? Because my reading of it was, this is actually quite positive. It shines a light on people who are experiencing these issues. And there's quite a lot of issues it goes through as to why she does this. But then it does, I suppose, inevitably glamorize it in a sense to people who might empathize with her situation, thinking, well, this is a Netflix show. It's all centered around this girl who committed suicide. And essentially that message lives on past her death and has this massive influence and huge ramifications for everyone that's of any significance in her life. She has this impact on them. So yeah, it made me a bit conflicted over it, really, whether or not I sympathized with her or whether I thought the show was maybe irresponsible.
Do they address the fact that, based on what you just said, this young lady had more of an impact in death than she ever had in life? I mean, that is that something they actually address, or is it just that's the conceit of the show? Because that's a quite a tragic kind of thing to posit, isn't it?
Not so much that she only has impact after she's dead, but people really only recognize the impact after she's gone. So it does kind of sell that message that once you're gone, you are more important. People think about you more.
I tell you what,
dangerous message.
I tell you what, Richard, I've been thinking a lot about someone now that they've gone. Now that Tormund died on the wall, it would seem off screen due to a dragon. I've been thinking about him a lot and his beard and his love for Brienne, which we'll never get to enjoy because of his passing. He was the best thing about that season. Like, every scene Tormund in, my heart was lifted by his gruff Viking exterior.
Ben, fear not, Ben, because even if the worst has happened, he will be back as a White Walker. So do not panic. Like, he's okay. You will see him again.
So that was a spoiler. I thought I'd start the discussion with immediately spoiling character deaths, because why not? Joel, do you watch Game of Thrones as well?
Yeah, I've watched.
You're all up to date?
Yeah, I'm all up to date, yeah.
Probably should have checked that before I spoiled a character death, but hey, that's fine. I did warn you at the top that I was going to do spoilers. So we're all watching, right, big warnings now, because this character probably isn't dead anyway, so it's not really a spoiler. You don't see it happen on the screen. The likelihood he's going to walk to Castle Black along the wall, isn't he? And then he'll be back around for the next season, because everybody loves him too much. They're not going to kill him off screen. Anyway, now, proper spoilers. How did we think about Game of Thrones season 7? I know, Richard, you kind of did a big catch up running up to this. I did a catch up a few months ago. Did like the last few seasons ready for this season as well. I thought the biggest, most obvious thing was how condensed it felt. But like, I still really enjoyed some of the big beats, some of the story revelations. I kind of like what they did with Bran, because it's just like acknowledging the kid couldn't act, so like turn him into a Yoda-esque robot. And that way he doesn't have to try and do performances. I also love the acknowledgements of how poor actors Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke are, because every time they have a scene together, they've got other people that can act with them in the scene, and they try and elevate their performances, which I think is great. And then there's that bit where Tyrion literally just calls out Jon, isn't it? And he goes, oh, I thought you did that broody thing. Well, I do the broody thing, but I do it better than you do, so don't worry about it, Jon. which I thought was brilliant. Like, the writers just totally acknowledging that he couldn't act his way out of a paper bag. But they do look pretty. And when the pretty people get it together, be they brother and sister or auntie and uncle or whatever, we don't mind in that show. That the flow just increases, Rich. It gets my flow moving even more. So I think the way it works is that, so Daenerys is his auntie, if I'm correct in thinking. Yeah, that's right. And he's her nephew. And now they're boning, and boning while Tyrion stands and watches from the dark corner. That wasn't creepy or anything. But I really enjoyed the season.
I didn't even notice that, was he?
Well, he's outside the door, to be fair, and he's like, oh, there's like a, I think it's meant to be a moment of like, oh, he can sense that this will be trouble. But it really kind of across like, he's just dogging. But that was the vibe. It's the kind of thing Tyrion would do, isn't it? Let's be honest. You know, he's happy to acknowledge all perversions. You know, that's just how he rolls. Yeah. I also liked Arya's transformation into the Terminator, which was good throughout the season. And I'm gonna miss Aidan Gillen, guys. I'm really gonna miss him. He's such a good actor, and I loved his mustachio twirling villainy.
I know what you mean. I so wanted him to die, but now he's gone. I'm thinking,
yeah, there's gonna be a big little finger shaped hole in Sansa. No, rude. So like, yeah, I mean, I've just rambled on about a few bits. And what were your standout stuff? What bits did you really enjoy?
Okay, I'm going to go the opposite perspective. I really didn't think much of this series. I thought that the pacing's obvious. It's awful. Just, you know, in the amount of time that I think Samwell Tarly leaves the Citadel to head up to Winterfell, the amount of time there that everyone else seemed to have managed to go down to King's Landing, back up to north of the Wall, back down. So it lost its very serious feel in that sense. I used to love how people used to take time to move to places. It felt very realistic. Everything seemed to play out in a very believable timeline. So that was one irritation. But
before you go on, the Sam thing, I just want to. It took him an entire season, didn't it, to get from the Wall to the
Maesters. Citadel, I think.
And then it took him one episode to get back from the Citadel to the Wall.
But it was virtually the only part I could pluck out of this season that in respect to somebody leaving somewhere and then turning up somewhere else that felt in keeping with the series as it originally was, I would say, whilst they were still following the books. Everything else, you know, people were jumping around left, right and centre. And then there was just other serious parts in it I just really didn't enjoy. I felt that they felt incredibly cheesy. Some of the combat sequences and things. I didn't quite like how what seemed to be major pieces in the story. As you got to the end of season six, they were sort of painting the Tyrell and their army as a serious threat. You know, they were going to be a massive problem for the Lannisters and things. And literally, it was dealt with in less than 3 minutes worth of footage. It was literally like they'd taken the Queen out on a chessboard. But just with no, you know, there was no serious place for them in the plot anymore. I just couldn't believe that they'd just done that. And then also some of the major moments in this series just felt so poorly done or so rushed. Like the moment where Tyrion goes back to King's Landing to meet Jaime Lannister, you know, that's the first time they're back together after he's seen him since he helped him break free, but he killed his dad. Everything just felt like these major moments where previously they would have built up massively to them just felt so rushed and poorly done. Really didn't enjoy it.
I think what's really clear is that now that they've departed from the books and the written material, they've basically gone, right, we're going to simplify and we're going to speed up. So let's take out a bunch of these moving pieces. So, they talk about the Dornish ladies and their army, the Tyrells and theirs. Let's get rid of them. That's too complicated. The TV audience don't need three different armies. Let's just get rid of that. And then let's just speed everything up. Let's move it along at a more of a TV pace, because I think we had a book pace before with the TV show, which had its very own tone. And now they've done away with that. And while we're getting to the meat of stuff quicker, it doesn't feel like, you know, because of that lack of build, the ramifications feel lessened. The impact of decisions feels lessened because we're moving at such a speed. The thing I hated the most about that sort of thing was the tendency for this show to introduce a character that maybe you hadn't seen for a while for them to then get killed in the subsequent episode or scene. Just to be like, remember them? They're dead now. Tie that off with a bow. Let's get rid of that. They must have done that three or four times this season. The one that really stood out to me was the White Walker chick who came back. Oh, this was last season, wasn't it? The White Walker chick that came back with one of the Starks, literally just to get killed by Ramsay 5 minutes later. Like, that character hadn't been in the show for like two seasons and then killed off instantly. There's a lot of that going on. Like, you know, with the Tyrells and the Dornish chicks, you know. I love villains. I always like heels and I love bad guys. And I love Cersei and how fucked up she is. I'm actually rooting for her at this point. I really, really don't like Daenerys. So I kind of just want her to lose and be humiliated in defeat because she's such a... Well, that's the thing they do seem to be doing nicely is that she's all talk about breaking the wheel. But when it comes down to it, I don't think she's any better or any different than Cersei. And I think that's where they're going to go with that. And I think John, no, now is the rightful heir anyway. So I think, I suspect there's going to be some very interesting tension with that in the next season where they end up. They're going to end up fighting each other, aren't they? So in some form or other, there'll be some betrayal or backstabbing. John needs to die as well, though. I get really bored of his pious, oh, I don't want to break an oath. I just made an oath.
Can he? I think they made a very, very strong point in the previous series to highlight the fact that he's
chosen.
Yeah, in some sense. Obviously, he was killed, brought back to life, and then during the Battle of the Bastards, like everything there seemed set up to show that he, no matter what happened, he couldn't be killed.
I think he is going to die.
Yeah, they're all going to die.
I assume once they've met their purpose, but until that point, he's invulnerable.
You're probably going to have Gendry on the Iron Throne, aren't you? So it's like, that's who it's going to be, isn't it? Baratheon's son.
I don't know. I kind of feel they telegraphed him having a child with Daenerys in this series, and that will be his purpose. So once she's pregnant, he'll be gone.
And it's, the Targaryens famously only bred within themselves, didn't they, to keep the purity. So there is that, I suppose.
Do you think they're going to
find out and be wigged out, or they're going to just be like, it's still hot. Let's keep going. Branopedia will show up and be like, by the way, I am Robo Bran from the future and the past. And I shall tell you that you're actually... They'll be like, where's your proof, Bran? He'll be like, I don't need proof. I'm the three-eyed raven. Shut up, Bran. Get back in your corner.
Is that a scene with Bran and Sam not feel... It's like Sam literally turned up. He's like, oh, hi, Bran. You made it back to Winterfell. I hear your brother's here now. And he's just like, oh, yeah, he's not my brother. He was just like, someone, and then just tells his whole backstory. And it just felt so artificial.
Well, because they had to move Sam to Bran so Sam could say he read the thing.
Yeah, I know.
I saw the thing. And then it legitimizes Bran's claims. Otherwise, it's just some crazy kid who says he's some kind of mystical warg person. And everybody's just like, fuck off, Bran. You went above the wall and you've come back a cunt. There's nothing else about you. You're just a dick.
Speaking of cunts, do we not think the Hound has just been relegated to man who says cunt? I think it said that in the credits.
He was recently on Reddit talking, this is the actor who plays the Hound, how literally people come up to him in the street and they're just like, oh, you're the Hound, will you please just tell me to fuck off? And so he had to turn around and go, in the Hound's voice, fuck off. And he's just like, so they're happy because I told them to fuck off, and I'm happy because I got to tell this fan to fuck off. And we're all happy. But it was a very lovely story.
That is awesome. The catharsis involved there. That I don't want to talk to this fan, and I get to say what I really want to say to them.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's a win-win for everybody. That is good, actually. I mean, he shouldn't have been brought back. He shouldn't have been brought back. I mean, he had an end point to the story, and clearly, for some reason, I feel like that was a TV decision. I haven't read the books, Joel, but it didn't feel like it made much sense for him to reappear with Ian McShane when he did last season. I don't know. Was that this season? Oh, they all blend together. I can't remember.
Last season.
That was last season, wasn't it?
The return of the Hound was highlighted. There was one other bit that... So I'm sat there, and this is when they went north of the Wall. They're on their way to steal a White Walker so they can take it back and show Cersei. And there's that big, having that big fight on the ice, and literally you just suddenly see a White Walker grab someone and pull them down. You're like, oh, which one of the cast members had died? Oh, no, it was just some extra. And then this happened like five times, and the whole time I'm expecting, I need to rewind to see which of the major cast members has suddenly died. And then it turns out that they had sort of five or six red shirts with them.
The funny
you didn't see at any other scene while they were walking.
So when the Northern Avengers walked through the Wall in the previous episode and you saw them walking out and there was just them, they must have stopped and waited for six extras to catch up to them just after the camera stopped rolling, because they weren't there before. And then it's like there are wide shots of them when they're like trekking, doing their Lord of the Rings moment. And, again, red shirts not always apparent. And yet there were plenty there to die. And then they killed the one person that dies there that matters, died in his sleep. It wasn't even in combat. And I'm like, why? He was really, first of all, I really like that character. The priest guy. Oh, what was it? And he had like the
he kept thinking about the other guy. I can't remember his name.
He was fun. He's played by that comedian, wasn't he?
Dennis Pennis.
Dennis Pennis, yeah. I need the idea of sleep. And I was just like, oh, and then with the hell goes, oh, yeah, it makes you feel better. It's a good way to go. And it's just like, oh, but let's, oh my God, the strategy of that entire exposition, right? That you have what ends up when Daenerys shows up, you've got the two major leaders on this complete bullshit quest that makes no sense at all that it needed to be done. It was just, it just wanted to introduce an action beat and a way to give him the dragon. Give the Night King the dragon. That's all that was. And it was just like, it doesn't make any fucking sense that you'd risk all these massively important people to go and get a zombie. Like, are you fucking kidding? That was so dumb. That really annoyed me. Especially after something as grounded and realistic as the Battle of the Bastards, which felt great last season. You then see them doing this just like no strategy, no thought, no tactics, and it was just fucking lame. However, when that dragon showed up with the Dothraki to take on the train, the Lannister train heading back to King's Landing, one of the coolest action beats ever. The fact that the dragon breath is basically napalm, the way, oh man, it was so good to finally see a dragon in proper combat.
Yeah.
That excited me. However, I was rooting for Bronn to kill her the whole time. I really wanted to see one of those spears go through her chest and just take her out, but well, I'm sure it's coming. But that was really good. Anything else you guys wanted to bring up? I mean, Joel, I can totally see your problems, Joel. However, I was swept along on the waves of hype and excitement, and I did enjoy it for the most part. Definitely problems, though. Definitely. But, you know, the next season's only going to be, I think, one episode longer. I think one episode shorter, actually.
No, shorter.
I think it's six episodes, isn't it? That's right, yeah. And it's not going to be out in 2019. So we've got plenty of time to wait and ponder and lose all interest.
I thought it was five episodes. So, yeah, I do worry about that last series.
I think it's six, but I think they're going to be like an hour and a half long from what I was reading.
Right. Yeah. The last bit of this series, the collapse of the wall,
Yeah.
that actually happen? Because I've only watched the episode once and someone's told me, oh, no, that was just Bran's premonition. Didn't actually happen yet.
I'm pretty
sure it happened, yeah. Now you've got me questioning it. But
that's what I thought, but sure I think that before it's Bran thinking about it and his eyes going all glazed and shit. So I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure that happened. That would make very little sense to end the season on a premonition. Like
exactly what I told my father-in-law, the idiot. But
yeah, I think that was definitely meant to have happened. Yeah, and it was kind of amusing that the only reason that actually happened was because Daenerys was a cunt and went up there with dragons so that he could get one, because they couldn't have actually brought the wall down without it, because the wall was magically bound and they literally could never have passed it. So until the dragon showed up, they were stuck above the wall, and then she gave them what they needed. So, you know, so that means the white king, or what's it called? The Witch King. Is it the Witch King? Something like that, whatever. He's actually Bran. And he's actually fucking them all over. That's actually what's going on. Have you heard that theory?
No, interesting.
Yeah. The theory is that he is Bran from the future / past, where he's kind of gone in a future point. He's warged into the past and got stuck in the past in that guy's head, and has become, that's what makes that guy into this bad guy. Cause it's all kind of, it's a bit like Star Wars mythos. It's like, you know, the idea that it's cyclical and it's predestined and all that sort of stuff. And it will always just keep happening. Yeah.
The proper King of the North then, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Brand. Yeah. I really hope they fuck up King's Landing finally as well. That'd be funny. I think they should just walk straight down past Winterfell and just go and get Cersei in the next season. That'd be amusing, wouldn't it? I love Cersei. Anyway, what else has been going on? You watched Fear the Walking Dead as well, but nobody cares about that.
First. Yeah. Why, have you seen it? Do you like it?
No, it's garbage.
There's no one like it.
My wife watches them. I've just never set that. I don't know. I just can't get into the idea of a zombie TV series. Especially when my wife's just like, I can't believe they killed off one of the main characters. I'm like, surely he'll just be back as a zombie in the next episode. Like, chill. But no, yeah, I've not really got into it.
Just chill, man. Just chill. I think the problem for me is I would already burn out on the main Walking Dead TV series when Fear the Walking Dead came along. And the prequel nature of it, you know, let's all be ignorant of what these things are and all bumble around confused in the beginning. I've seen it so many times.
Yeah, there is kind of that, but it takes a different route to The Walking Dead as we know it, because that's well established now, and you know, I don't think that setting is really going much beyond where it is. But so at least Fear the Walking Dead rewinds a bit and gives a bit more time to drawing out the period of the fall of humanity, really. When Walking Dead, the original series, humanity is pretty much done. Society is done from the first couple of episodes.
Well, not from immediately, because he wakes up after it's gone down.
After it's done, yeah. So this drags that out a bit and covers things that the original series doesn't. So it is a worthwhile accompaniment to it.
But we don't find out why, do we?
Why
zombies? No. I think that's a very conscious decision on Kirkman's part, that they're never actually going to address that, as far as I know. But okay. Do you enjoy it? You're liking it? You're enjoying it?
Yeah. I mean, I think series three is running at the moment. I'm halfway through series two. And yeah, I like it so far. It's good. If you like The Walking Dead and you want more, this is a nice spin-off.
I was reading some stuff about Romero recently, and you know, lamenting his passing and stuff like that. And I think I'm more likely just to go back and watch his films. Well, the first three anyway, because after that they get really bad. So bad. But you know, yeah, it's just. It's all like a poor imitation, I find. But I do love my zombie fiction. So I haven't read much in a while, so I might delve back in. I just want to give a quick shout-out to a little bit of tech I got in the last week or so, which has really impressed me, actually. I took advantage of Sky's deal at the moment for another £12 a month. I've got Sky Q multi-room set up in my home now. Have you guys got Sky Q?
No, I haven't, but obviously, as I used to previously work at a set-top box manufacturer, I know all the intricacies of how it works.
I didn't know that at all about yourself, Joel. That's kind of interesting. I didn't know that at all. You were a set-top box manufacturer.
I did.
But I've never had multi-room before or anything like that. And SkyQ is such an improvement. I know you guys both use Sky, don't you? It's such an improvement over the base box, like the performance of the hardware, the interface, the tech. The voice control is amazingly good on the remote. Absolutely, like, I was blown away by its recognition software. Like, so much better than, say, like a Siri or Kinect or anything like that on Cortana on Xbox. Like, oh my God. And yeah, I've just found it pretty seamless. And the fact that I can continue watching on my phone or my tablet or my other, I've got another box set up, or, you know, it just knows the position of all the shows wherever you look, and your whole library is available on your mobile and everywhere else. And you can watch live TV on your mobile as well with this, which I don't know if that was something you could do before, but it's like black magic how well this works. So I was proper impressed.
I think you could do it. Sky had all those services before. This brings them all together in a much more seamless fashion. I think the previous generation of boxes were pretty limited with regards to sort of catch-up services and things. They sort of very much, the satellite broadcast is very one way, and this Sky Q stuff's very focused on like two-way content delivery now. So yeah, I read a lot of positive and good things about the whole thing, and the whole system looked and read very nice. Did you get the silver main box? Yeah, so you
I got the fancy one, the best one.
Oh right, so that does support the 4K service that will steadily roll out over the next probably 5 years. I should expect they'll start upping it.
No, I can't wait to try it. I mean, 4K TV is the next thing. Xbox One X. The guy who installed it was really good as well. And you know, pointed out, you know, the 4K won't work through as your pass through on your Xbox One X, so you need to plug it in direct and stuff like that. You know, he really knew what he was talking about. Which is nice from tech support. Usually they're fucking bumbling idiots half the time, the installers. So this one was actually really on it. And what I don't get, the most impressive thing for me is with my satellite box, the little box I've got connected at the moment, just behind here, me with my, where I do my reviews and stuff. There's no Sky connection. It does everything over Wi-Fi, but there's literally no discernible delay to watching live TV or getting the recordings off the main box or any. It happens instantly. And I can't really get my head around how that's even possible. It's incredibly responsive and just works like flawlessly, which is a kind of clearly what they strove for. And it's not something I'm used to with this kind of tech. So proper impressed. Yeah, really. I mean, only £12 more. I was like, yeah, fucking do it. Oh, and I got the newest hub as well, which is much, much better. Dual band, AC, all of that stuff. Much better than the old Sky Hub as well. So really, really good service so far. Fingers crossed it continues. But to be fair, I started off with Sky with just TV. And their customer service and everything has been so good over the years. I now do everything through them, I think. Broadband, phone, you name it. If I can do it from Sky, I'm probably going mobile as well. My contract's up, but like, yeah, they just cover the whole thing really, really well. I know Rupert Murdoch's an arsehole, by the way. I know, but like, you go up enough corporation ladders, they're all arseholes, aren't they? Really? I mean,
I guess
it's tricky anyway.
Rupert Murdoch is probably the worst of them, though, isn't he? I don't know. That's kind of why I'm not with Sky. Yeah,
I thought you were with Sky. Oh, sorry, Rich. Yeah, I thought you were. I assumed you were. Okay.
I do kind of need to look at my package because I've just got a crappy old TiVo and it is balls.
That was the main thing I noticed. I just had the Sky HD box and it was the performance and the interface was so fucking slow and just like sluggish, and you'd have to restart the thing every 5 minutes. And well, that's an exaggeration, not quite that bad. But yeah, this new one is just fucking super, super quick. Like, they've really put time into the tech and you can tell it's been developed well. But anyway.
So that point on the 4K, though, I know you haven't got the 4K TV yet, but you can't use the Xbox pass through even on
the One X.
No, it doesn't. It won't do 4K. It's not HDMI 2. It's only HDMI for 1.4 pass through support, so it can't do.
Is that the same on the X?
So, yeah, it will be. Yeah, I think so.
Same as on the PS4 Pro, I think, as well. That won't do HDR pass through.
Anyway, though, is it?
What I meant was the PSVR breakout box is what I meant, which
will
do 4K at 30, but will not do 4K at 60 with HDR. It's a pain in the ass. I have to swap the wires around every time I'm using it or not. So
that's bad.
That's fun. Yeah. That's great. What a good consumer solution there. Brilliant.
I didn't think VR could be any more messy, but there we are.
Yeah, I'm glad I waited, and we'll continue to wait. I think we should probably, well, you know, it's in the description of the show where we can talk about whatever we fucking well want. So we just did talk about a bunch of TV. This isn't ostensibly just a video game podcast, so we are gonna get onto the video games now, and let's just get right into Destiny 2. Okay, I'm doing the review for this. It's a small little release from an indie studio. Have you heard of them? Bungie. I believe they've got some kind of weird little developer outreach thing happening with Activision, which they've got a little deal going on. Mario Kart,
Marathon. Definitely.
Marathon. I thought you said Mario Kart, which made even less sense. But I was just rolling with the bit, man. Like, don't kill my flow. That's weird, actually. You mentioned Marathon, previous Bungie product. Holy crap, Destiny 2 is Halo. Like, it's like someone at the studio went, right, we departed way too much from the popular... Joel's dead. Joel's fallen over. What's happening with Joel? He's collapsed.
I was closing the window. It's pretty cold.
Okay. It was all very dramatic, and like, I was very distracted by the noises and the movement. I'm like a T-Rex. Right. So, yes, Halo. It's like somebody went, guys, you went too far away. You've gone too MMO. Bring it the fuck back. And they have. They're to the point where there is a tank level in this game. There is like a proper getting in your Scorpion, fucking up a bunch of dudes level. I was playing this and I go, my God, this is fucking Halo. This is why I'm enjoying this so much. This is let's bring in the cutscenes again. Let's give you characters to care about. Let's really hammer in that story and have those levels that are designed for certain specific combat experiences, just like they used to do in Halo. And guess what? They're very good. They are very good at that kind of shooter, and it shows. The rumor, this isn't a spoiler because it's a rumor, but the raid supposedly is going to have a massive space combat section. Oh. Like they did in Reach, if you remember rightly.
Yes.
So imagine that with your custom ship and how cool that could be.
That would be.
So cool. It's a rumor.
Yeah. I had the same feeling about it, that the story missions in the original Destiny were much more... There was just a one structure thing, wasn't there? And all of them were kind of much the same thing. Reach a waypoint, there's a load of enemies there, shoot them all. Or there's a boss there, shoot it till it goes. Mm-hmm. And there's more variety in this. Like you said, there's vehicle sections and different things happen in the missions that mix it up a bit from one another and give it more of a texture as a single player campaign. And I think it works as a single player game now. It didn't before.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
Yeah. Destiny was very much had a story, but in Destiny 2, they want to tell you the story is very much how I feel about it. It's the first thing I noticed, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler. Well, we've already spoiled other aspects anyway, is sort of after the initial mission at the tower, obviously you've got all the familiar characters that they did manage to give some life to by the end of Destiny 1. You go for that entire sequence, and then after being knocked off the tower by the antagonist Ghoul, you wake up, and then for the first time in my life, you're seeing your character kind of from a third-person perspective. You're limping around, sort of playing this sweet bit of violin music to try and sort of show the somber and sorrow, it's that nature of the situation you're kind of in, that the Earth's last city has fallen kind of thing. And I was just sitting there thinking, there's something really weird about this. And that's when the third-person camera clicked. I was like, I can't recall them ever doing this before. This has always been a first-person game, and here they're actually trying to do some different play to try and, you know...
Well, whenever you took out a sword... Whenever you take out a sword, whenever you get on a sparrow...
You're right. Yeah, sorry, there are some elements. Not
however,
not for story delivery, though, yeah.
No, that was a really cool moment. I thought, in general... It's an easy device. It's something I've seen before in games, but it was well implemented. But you touched on something there that I want to give a sort of singular shout out to, which is the music. Holy crap, man! The music in this game is fucking amazing. I mean, it's possibly the best music Bungie has ever had in a game. I mean, I know we're talking about Halo here, but the themes that the different enemies have, like how when you're engaging the Hive, it has a very specific sound to it. The music changes when you're engaging the Cabal or the Vex or the Fallen, and it really builds that, coupled with these striking, beautiful skyboxes and vistas that they have in these games, and that couples with the music in so wonderfully. And then, it does the thing where environmentally the music changes depending on action beats or slower moments, or if you're in a patrol or a story mode or whatever. And it's just, I think it's the first time that I've immediately gone and, I haven't actually bought it yet, but I'm definitely going to be buying that soundtrack because I looked for it like on iTunes Music and stuff, and it's not there. So I'm going to fucking buy that. They're going to get my money, because this is unbelievably good work on that soundtrack. And it only gets better as the game goes along. My stuff with the stuff with the Hive is my favorite. It's hard to describe, but it has such a brilliantly kind of, like, there's a rock element to it, but there's some great synth in there and electronic stuff, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Destiny and Halo before it was quite orchestral, and I don't think Bungie, although I really like the Halo soundtracks, and
it wasn't bad, it is
very focused on that orchestral style. And this has got, like you say, much more of a synthetic feel. It feels like it's taking cues from Mass Effect.
Yes.
Really got that balance. So, yeah.
Well, it's stepping away. Marty O'Donnell left, didn't he? Yeah. So it's kind of like, you can see that there are definite connections and, there's thematic similarities, but they are doing their own thing now. And it has been set apart. I think it's, I want to say, Michael Silvestri. I could be wrong. Could be the guy behind the music on Destiny 2. I'm not sure where I'm pulling that from. So that could definitely be wrong. Really good. The game still looks stunning, but it kind of takes me into another element of Destiny 2, where this isn't really a sequel, is it? What do you expect from a sequel in a film or a sequel in a game? You expect bigger, you expect prettier, especially in a game, you expect scope sort of increases. I don't think that's here. I think the story is longer. There's the same amount of worlds. I think that it's interesting that all the worlds have a patrol zone. So there is an explorable nature to all of those environments. There are more things to do in the world in a structured sense. However, there are no new enemies. The encounters still feel very much the same as they did in Destiny. Yes, there are new guns. I'm a big fan of SMGs, for example. I've discovered I really enjoyed them, especially in close combat. And I really like how they've changed how the guns work in this, and we'll talk about that more. But I'm very positive, very, very, very much enjoying it. It just doesn't feel like something, a game that's taken 3 years to come out. It feels like it's an evolution, an extension of where Destiny 1 was at the end, where it was with all of its expansions and with its The Taken King and Rise of Iron and that whole complete product. This feels like they've taken that and added on this new story and some new mechanics and put out Destiny 2. It feels very much like, if you remember when they were talking about it originally, that Destiny was going to have a 10-year lifespan, that they weren't actually going to bring out a sequel. I think the sequel exists because of the problems with their production pipeline and because of the problems with getting content out in time and because of the financial deal with Activision. I don't think it exists because Bungie turned around and went, this game deserves a sequel. You know, it's not a creative reason that this is a sequel. It's a production and a monetary reason that this is a sequel.
So what's missing from it that you'd want other than new enemies?
I would want new enemies. I mean, the biggest thing would be, where the fuck are my new enemies? Where are the new... There's a tease right at the end after the credits that we may be getting something new in the future. But, it was cool. They've even got the Taken in there, right? Which was a nice reveal to me. That the Taken are used in the story. However, it's pretty thin as to why. But everything just feels like reused assets. I mean, the enemies are all the same models. The character designs, you know, they've been tweaked in some ways. Like, some of the enemies behave a little differently. The knights have a bigger regeneration from in the hive. Like, when they're using their shields, they regen more health. There's been some balance tweaks, but so much of the assets are the same. And from a sequel, I'd expect more of a leap. More additional stuff.
I noticed some subtleties. One thing I put down in my notes whilst playing is I actually noticed a bit more synergy between some of the enemies during combat sequences and stuff, particularly with the servitors, for example. I was doing a public event where actually servitors, where previously they sort of mentioned, oh, you can't do this because you need to kill these three servitors before you can progress. But there was nothing really visual that kind of reinforced that sort of statement. But now they sort of have like the other servitors acting as generating shields for other units on the battlefield. So you have to clear these ones out first before you can deal with the other ones and things. So I sort of observed that, yeah, there seems, like you say, it's much more about, I think, refinement and improving certain aspects of what they had. They haven't gone for a kind of, they didn't need to go evolutionary. I think they've managed to sort of distill the game down into the bits that they really know the players want and focus on those and developing those.
This is a starting point as well, remember. I mean, it's not a traditional sequel. This is a platform to be built on with two expansions already announced. There'll be more after that. It will evolve massively, won't it, as the first one did. So I don't feel that there's not enough in there. I think that there's plenty enough for me to get my teeth into, and it feels that the way that the content that's there is delivered is continuously... it's just keeping me engaged constantly. Every mission, I'll go up at half a level or a level, or I'll get some new items. It doesn't feel like I'm grinding for nothing like it did in the original Destiny a lot.
I think we're all talking from perspective either we haven't finished the story yet or we've only just finished the story, like myself. And, you know, the end game of Destiny is really where the game of Destiny is. Yeah. The story is really just a tutorial anyway. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see how I feel in a few more days when I put in some serious more time into this, which I have allotted myself over the next couple of days to really get into the end game before I do the review. I love the level design. I was expecting a little bit more of a visual kind of step up. Without the constraints of having to develop for the previous platforms generation, I thought maybe we'd get more kind of impressive lighting situations or, like, I don't know, level design or character models that were going to really blow me away in places. But everything seems very much on the same in the same place as Destiny. There wasn't much of a big... No, I think they do. If you... Come on, what was it? The Vex world in the first game. Venus, I want to say. That looked, you know... That looked amazing and stunning and beautiful in every way. And they look just as good, but I don't think they look better.
They're different, though, aren't they? I don't think that it's not that they've not lifted all of the world textures from Destiny 1.
No, they're completely new. They're completely new. Yeah. The only thing that I kind of regret is, like, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing all this parity between the two. Why can't I take the Destiny 2 mechanics and improvements and put them in Destiny 1? Why isn't there a synergy between these two titles? And so then we wouldn't just have four worlds to play with, we'd have eight. or whatever it ended up at the end of Destiny 1, you know, add them together in some magical tech way that makes no sense. But I, you know, that's the thing. It'd be really cool.
It's the Call of Duty model. They will resell you the old content from the previous game in DLC map packs, Ben.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, if they said to me for $20 more, you can take all these improvements into the first game, I'd be like, yeah, okay, let's do that. But, you know, I really like it, and I'm going to play a lot more of it. And, like, you know, I'm going to hit the Strike playlist hard later on today. I've already spent some time in the Crucible, which turns out I'm pretty damn good at, with a kill-death ratio of around 3, which is crazy for me, which, like, something about how Destiny is in multiplayer clicks with me, and I really dig that. But I'm going to put some more time into that. And, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to talk about here. Anything else you guys wanted to bring up?
Just the you know, you were talking about the environments and the graphical improvements. I haven't yet really drawn a conclusion on them and stuff, but I have found that the environments certainly carry that. That's the kind of word I want to think of. They just feel massive, which is again kind of epic in size and scale. I used to love the moon from the Destiny original. How they managed to make something that's inherently so barren, grey and bland, or at least should be, look so amazing and fantastic and detailed. I absolutely loved the moon from the original Destiny, and yeah, sort of not short long after the opening sequence where you're kind of making your way over that snowy mountain and stuff, and it sort of gives you the whole overview in the distance. You can see the fallen city and the traveler and stuff. Yeah, I think I just love the environment work.
It is stunning. Mm. Like, the environmental storytelling is second to none. I mean, I was when I went to Titan for the first time, I was like, oh, I thought this was meant to be like, you know, pinnacle of the golden age, and I'm walking around on what looked like a bunch of oil platforms. This is really lame. And then I got to the Arcology and I was like, oh fuck, okay, right, now that's golden age. Like, that's pinnacle of human capability right there. This giant, humongous structure, self-contained world on a world. This is pretty fucking impressive. And it's all run down, but the AI is still functioning inside. And then that's all Hive stuff in there, and it just goes down and down and down. And the level design is like, I'm playing an Aliens game at this point. It's creepy. It's claustrophobic. It's intense. The music is working. The lighting is great. It's all darks and golds and, you know, reds and sort of like alien and just hostile. And you're on edge, even though you're a badass. And it's just like, yes, this is fantastic level design. I don't know how you guys are playing, but I'm doing this thing where I get to a world and I'll beat all the side missions before I move on to the next one. So I'm pretty much over. I was over leveled throughout the entire story. So that made the final boss fight somewhat of a joke. But yeah, you can't really avoid that, sadly. I think we're balancing the game in the way they have. But yeah, how did you guys feel about Gaul? I mean, I really like the way they have these cutscenes that cut to the Cabal's perspective, and they really sort of flesh out his character, because you don't get really any interaction with him until the very, very end. So I think possibly they realized that, and they kind of went, all right, we're going to need to make you care about these things, about Gaul's wider story as you flit around the solar system doing your kind of getting the band back together. And I kind of dug that. I enjoyed that. He's got some really good stuff in there with the speaker in those cutscenes. Really, really good. I don't want to spoil where the game ends, where you end up the story. It's just like, yes. So I look forward to you guys getting to the end point. I won't spoil that.
I haven't seen too much of him, obviously, for me. My first initial thoughts were like, with his little face mask and stuff, made me think of Bane a bit from the kind of Batman series and things. But I'm just trying to find where the message window link is, because I want to see if I can. Can you paste images in here? No, I can paste a link to an image. Have a look at this image. I came across this on Reddit and it made me laugh.
He does have a similarity to a grunt.
He
is like a giant grunt.
Is he some throat? The commander of the grunts, or so. He has that. You know, he's got that Cabal-y space marine feel to him that they kind of are, the Cabal always had from the first game. So, he is having some interesting conversations, obviously, with the speaker. He's only had a couple, I'm enjoying how this is going to play out.
For me, the weirdest bit about the story was the introduction of the Almighty, and how it kind of came out of nowhere, almost like they went, we need a bigger threat to propel you around the solar system to, you know, to find the Vanguard again. And it was like, oh, there's this big thing by the sun and it's going to destroy the sun, and then it won't matter if you have your light or not, because the whole solar system will be destroyed. And I was like, okay then. Nobody mentioned that. I thought the fact that he took the Traveler was pretty bad, but I guess this is worse. Cool. Better fuck that up. And you do. Yeah, that was cool. How do you guys feel? This is a good one. This has come up from a few people I've been speaking to. How have you guys felt about the very conscious decision to not give you a Sparrow until the very, very end?
I'm on the second world and I hadn't been given a Sparrow yet. But I knew, because I've been given some unlock codes for some custom Sparrows, that they are obviously in the cave somewhere. But yeah, it's kind of lingering in my mind. It's like, when are they going to give me a Sparrow? When are they going to give me a Sparrow? When are they going to give me a Sparrow?
So yeah, I've just got mine. It's when you reach level 20.
Yep. There's two ways. Either you beat the story or you reach level 20, whatever comes first. Because when you hit level 20, you can go to Everest and she gives you a bunch of free shit. And one of those is, well, you're not guaranteed a Sparrow out of that, but a lot of people get one. Or you beat the story, yeah.
But the other thing, I had
Sparrows.
You got two.
You can only ride one at once, can't you? You greedy fucker. Jesus.
I hadn't actually, to this point in the game also, I've not seen anybody else on a Sparrow. So, traveling the first world, I didn't see anybody. I saw some of the Fallen on whatever the things they have. I saw some of them flying around, but I'd never saw another player on a Sparrow. And I did walk past a lot of level 20 guys. Are they limited to which world you can use them on? No.
Once you got them, you can use them EDZ, you can use them IO, you can go anywhere with it. I think maybe not on Titan because it's too small. But yeah, any of the larger open environments, you can totally bum around on them. But yeah, I thought it was very smart, because it makes you take your time and it makes you take in the world, and it makes you, you know, do things like the Lost Sectors and do some treasure hunting and spelunking, and makes you really take in all the work they've done. Because, you know, the habit there, I think they must have gone, right, well, a lot of these people would have played Destiny 1. And immediately, if we give them a Sparrow early on, they're just going to jump on it and they are going to fly straight to an objective marker like they played Destiny 1, because they played all those missions 400 times and all you did was just fly from one objective marker to the next and not really pay any attention to what was around you. So they've clearly gone, no, let's make them, until they hit the end level, really immerse themselves in these environments, in these locations, and get to know them. And I think it's a very smart choice. And in a way, that brings me on to my next question for you guys, maybe the inverse of that. Do you feel the shaders options that they've gone for were a very bad choice? Because frankly,
it's totally bullshit.
See, but I don't think it's a problem. Because you haven't hit endgame yet. Trust me, mate. You get so many fucking shaders from everything. You don't need to worry about using them.
Why match that then? If they're so numerous that they're virtually unlimited, why make me manage them?
What do you mean manage them?
Well, if it's just like the old one, you just had a color and you could switch it in whenever you wanted, couldn't you?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? If they're going to give you so many that you're never run out, what's the point?
Right, so Everess and her bright engrams, right? The microtransaction stuff in Destiny 2. You get a bright engram every time you level up, right? Mm-hmm. So you get that shit all the time, especially if you've got some of the buffs running in the strike playlist. You're probably going to level up twice in an hour. So you get shaders from that constantly. You get shaders from beating strikes. You get shaders from engrams. You get shaders just thrown at you. So you're saying, well, why monetize it? Well, why not? If people are going to buy stuff that they're going to get for free, then that's on them, isn't it? I mean, you're not forcing anybody to do that. It's not. I don't think that's gross in any way.
Considering the pay aspect of it.
Just
the inventory management.
Oh, the controversy has come from the fact that you get them in the microtransaction buying grounds.
Well, I'm not about that. I mean, people wanted to pay for extra palette options without it being a dispensable product, something that you can just add to your ensemble and choose it whenever you like, I'd be fine with that. But why make it disposable? Why have I got to find another one when I've used
it? Because it's just a laugh. I mean, so far I haven't seen any shaders that have made me go, oh, wow, I've got to use that one. because I'm not at a point where I've settled on a look yet. You know, you're not going to settle on an armor thing until you get into the higher levels of the light, where you're like, this is the gear I want. This is, or maybe you've got a couple of sets, a couple of different loadouts, and you're going to really hammer down on them, and then you're just going to try and, you know, infuse into them. I haven't got there yet, but when I get there, then I'll start thinking about how I want my character to look. And, you know, people were saying, oh, I'd have one look for the Crucible matches and I'd have one look for PvE, and then I just switch between them. I'm like, well, sure, but why don't you just have a bit of fun with it? The fact is, you can put the shaders now on your gun, and then all your different guns and all your different armor pieces independently. So you can completely mix and match your look, and just, it's just a bit of fun. Who cares? Like, I mean, if you're really worried about the fashion of your Guardian and you're having a cohesive style, I mean, like, what the fuck, man? This is Destiny. What game? Go play Barbie's Fashion Simulator on the DS or something, if that's what you're looking for.
That's what's in there.
Yeah, but I don't think Bungie care about it. You know, they've given you lots more freedom to do with what you want. And if you want to fucking spend £400 on Bright Engrams, then, you know, good luck to you. Have fun with that, Mr. Whale. You know, I don't see a problem with it. I think they've gone down a different direction with it. They've gone down a different direction with a lot of things. We haven't even talked about how fucking weapons work yet in this game, which is totally different. So I think the fact that this is the thing people are moaning about just proves that they've done a whole lot of good and a whole lot better with Destiny 2 than they did Destiny 1. If the only problem you can quibble over is your fucking shaders.
That's definitely true, but I think the shaders thing is bullshit. I mean, it puts me off using them. I would want to use them otherwise, though. So I don't understand why they've made it that way. When something that, you know, it doesn't make a big deal. It's not a big deal. It doesn't make a big difference to me. It's just colours on some armour. But if they're there, I would like to be able to use them. I feel like I can't.
Just trust me. Just use them, man. Just use them. You're. It doesn't matter. That you will have. I've already got like half an inventory, half a vault full of them, like already. And I've only hit endgame yesterday. So like, just use them. Like seriously, Joel, how do you feel about shaders?
So I've not really formed an opinion on them yet. Well, it's mainly because I don't think I've actually got any. I haven't actually found any whilst wandering the world or looted any from anything so far. Sounds to me very much like that they've done is they've emulated the model with the chroma from the previous Destiny now, which was a bit more, am I right in sense you it's a one-time sure. use thing and it's tied into that piece of armor or item you apply
get one
it
drop
to.
That's got three or five uses to it and you have to apply that individually to pieces of armor or weaponry.
Oh, so not the entire set, you have to apply it to each individual item. And then if you wish to change any component of that set, you then you could end up with an unmatched piece of color, which is I can sense a bit of the frustration, I guess mainly because it feels probably like a regression into how things used to be as opposed to a positive step forward. Now, I'm not normally one who matters. I don't really care too much about cosmetic stuff in games that often. I don't tend to spend hours customizing my look or anything, but I did use the shaders in Destiny. I think I just, what I had is I had, oh, there's a red and black color set. I quite like that. I will just stick that on and probably never worry about changing it. But what it sounds like now is that won't work anymore. I can't just do that. I will, at some point, as I'm changing my items around and getting better armor and things, I'll steadily lose that red and black look that I had settled on and then hence have to find more matching shaders to reapply that color.
Yeah, it does feel regressive. It feels like if in Forza they took out the auto upgrade thing and just made you do it all manually and you've got to pay each time to do it. It just feels, well, fine, you can do that, but why make me do it? It's not that big deal. Why make it work?
Mm.
Too much effort.
Look, I mean, what we've learned is that Bungie are reactive, that they will listen to feedback, that they will make changes. I know Luke Smith, the game director, has already said this is what it is, but you know, I think they might make some tweaks. I mean, the Osiris focused DLC is out in December, for example, so you know, it's not going to be long. We're going to be getting new content and all kinds of things, so you know, we'll have to see what happens. So let's talk about the guns a little bit. How do you guys feel about not leveling up weapons anymore, and that you kind of get less freedom to be creative with things such as exotics and stuff like that?
Didn't even notice. I'd forgotten you could do that, to be honest.
I mean, the thing for me is that was a huge part of Endgame Destiny, that, you know, you'd get a new weapon and then you'd like level it up and you'd pick the way you'd want it to be loaded out. Like, there usually be two or three options in each tier. And there's still options in the legendary weapons. However, you don't have to unlock them. It's from the as soon as you get it. But with the exotics, the loadout is fixed across all the tiers. So you don't get to pick any changes. What I don't know, however, is if you get a different drop of the same exotic, if it will have a different loadout, which is possible, I suppose. It could be running off an RNG situation with the actual loadout. So that could be interesting to see. I haven't had any dupes yet, but when I do, I'll do some comparing and contrasting. You know, they've done a lot with streamlining the interface. They've done a lot with streamlining, you know, things like the leveling up. They're trying to make it simplified. My only concern with all that simplification is that does it take out a lot of the what brought you back and back and back for the end game stuff, for that grind? If it removes all that grind and that desire to, like, tweak and optimize and, you know, go for the best path for maybe a raid or a strike run or something like that, or a nightfall, does it take away some of the interest to bring people back? And that will be very interesting to see over the next coming weeks and months and stuff, and with myself personally and with you guys and with the wider community, if people are going to continue to be drawn back to Destiny 2 with the way that they've done these and implemented all these changes. There are numerous changes, way more than we've spoken about now. Is there
options available in base Destiny 1? Or is it
That's
in later?
That's more difficult for me to say. I mean, the gun leveling was there.
Yeah, they were. I can remember... One of the things I really did quite like about the sort of customization of the weapons was the ability to choose a different type of scope was one of them. You could tend to sort of...
You can still do that.
Yeah, so you can still can customize the scope on your weapon.
You don't get custom scopes in green and blues, but when you hit legendaries, you do. Right. When you get your purples, you'll be able to change them. There's usually three options. It's just you don't have to level up the gun anymore to do it, which is... I guess that's good, but at the same time, it doesn't encourage you to then get into the strike with that gun and play. There's also, I was talking to Mark, friend of the site, often has done various bits of content here last night, and he's a bit further on than me, and he's already settled on like a set. He's got purples across the board, and he's already settled on what he likes. And what he's doing is totally different to me, which is he is getting new gear and infusing it into the gear he already has, right? So whereas what I do is... until much further on with the light levels, I won't probably do this until I'm getting close to 300. But if I get a new gear that's better, I just apply it. And then I scrap the gear I'm not using anymore to get me my legendary shards, which I can then go to Xur with and buy, you know, exotics, or I can spend on various other things. My thinking being, this way, I'm trying out all the different loadouts, all the different weapons, getting to know everything, and I'm not like hammering down on a final build yet. Whereas Mark has gone for the final build immediately and is just upgrading into it. And I think it's interesting that, you know, this is the kind of game that gives you the freedom to play it in such different ways. And I love all that. And I can't wait to really start. You know, I haven't got a full purple set yet. I've got some really good exotics. I've got an exotic pulse rifle that I'm really enjoying right now. And last night I went to a quest giver and they said, "Here's, you're going to get a legendary reward for this." And I got my legendary, but I also got an exotic out of it. So I already, at this point, I've only just hit end game. I've already had about five or six exotics. Which obviously means that drop rate on the exotics is way bigger than it ever was in Destiny. And I think what they're doing as well, if you get an exotic and you're, say, level 16, light level 160 or something, you want to go and open that straight away, because the engram now has a level. And it's like, if you wait, it's not going to go up if you wait to open it. So the idea is that you use these things as soon as you get them. The other big change I've seen is when you get most engram drops now in a mission or when you're out in a strike, will give you the weapon or the armor immediately. You don't have to decode them. Yes. Now you do get decodable legendaries, and I think all exotic drops are decodable at the Cryptarch. However, you know, it's much less hoarding engrams, and then you are, "Oh, I'm full on engrams, gotta go back to the fucking tower, decrypt all my fucking..." Oh, they've got to do it one at a time, because then I have to equip the best thing to make sure I get the best possible engram. You know, all that's been taken out of that now, because you just get them at the level they are set at when you pick them up. You know, and it will often be higher than where you're at. Actually, I think engrams are always higher than your current level. And then, you know, you decrypt them, and then you find out what it is. I kind of miss a little bit the mystery of what you're going to get. I always thought it was exciting. I don't know about you guys. You got your 20 engrams. You're going back to the tower. What's it going to be? That blue could turn into a purple. That purple could turn into an exotic. Yeah. Woo! You know, or the other way.
It was a disappointment, so I don't regret that they've changed that. That's fine.
Richard, you're talking to a guy here who spent about 20 hours at the loot cave. So, back in the good old days. So I used to love my engram farming. That was a fun time. But don't get me wrong, there's plenty of new fun things. I'm really enjoying Lost Sectors. If you guys haven't done any of the sort of the spelunking, going into the tunnels of a particular environment and finding the mystery, like boss that's down there, and then killing him and opening up his chest, often really good rewards from that. So I highly recommend doing those. The public events on a timer, and you can see them on the map. How good is that? Public events are fun and accessible now.
It's very nice that you can see where they're going from. Particularly, one of my frustrations I can remember from the previous game was about having to, for some of the bounties or certain other sort of longer term missions that you had in your books, having to complete certain public events and things. And you literally had to go and find a website where someone was sort of, some people had all got together and try and reverse engineered how it worked. And you could find out where to go and when the next expected public event was and things. So it's much nicer that they've solved that out, because that was a real frustration, sort of just trying to hang around in a certain area, not only hoping that A, you'd get a public event, but B, it would be the right type of public event as well, because some of the areas obviously supported one or two different types as well. So,
and the public events, two of them gave me exotics when I did them, which was pretty cool. They have heroic modifiers, which you have to know how to trigger. There's usually something you have to do during the event to trigger the heroic modifier. And if you do that, you get better rewards. Obviously, you make it more difficult. So hopefully do it with a fire team or do it with others around you. But there's all kinds of stuff there as well. I will say, like, once you get end game, that's when you unlock patrols. That's when you unlock strikes. That's when you unlock all of that. One thing I didn't like, the strikes are no longer integrated into the world. Strikes aren't like on the map with the other things, part of the story like they were in Destiny 1. Which I think is a bit of a shame. They're kind of like pulled out and just, like a searchable hopper like Crucible is, which I kind of like the integration. I know it was unnecessary, and this is a streamlining measure, and it's just like, here's a playlist for just doing some PvE stuff. There's another thing as well that's PvE, which is the flashpoints. I haven't done one of those yet, but I'm going to probably do that later on today. Lots of rewards from those as well. Yeah, there's loads of good stuff in there. We're going to talk about this again, I'm sure, in another 2 weeks. We've all had more time and hopefully had a chance to play together, which would be nice. Mm-hmm. I'm digging it, guys. I'm really enjoying it. I know I was a bit negative at the beginning here, but overall, I think it's a massive improvement. And I like Richard said, it's an evolving platform, and I can't wait to see where they're going to go with it. I am excited to see how this develops over the coming months and years, supposedly. Hopefully their development platform is somewhat better than it was before. Fingers crossed.
So far my first impressions, really enjoy it. Like I say, it's at its absolute core, it's just got that gunplay and feel that I absolutely love.
Great.
I don't think there's anything better personally for me that out there that feels that good. So and then just from there, everything that spirals off that, I'm just also enjoying as well. I'm really looking forward to playing more of it and just getting more involved with all the new stuff that you've talked about. That sounds really good. Finding out a bit more about how it all works myself. And hopefully in 2 weeks' time, I'll have a bit more opinion to say.
That is the fun meta of Destiny, is like working out all the end game stuff, all the loops that you want to be running, all the best optimizations for gear and stuff like that. There's loads of little things in the game which you can lose hours to, and I recommend doing. I do really recommend, though, try all the guns, guys. Don't be put off by maybe stuff you didn't like in the past or like the sound of. They've all got pros and cons. For example, who knew SMGs would be as awesome as they are in this game? I absolutely adore them, especially if it's an energy one. You just rip through shields like they're not even there. They're really, really, really cool. Do you like the way the weapon stuff now is kinetic, energy, and heavy? I kind of dig that. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, to me, you've still got free weapons. It's slightly muddled it around a little bit, but yeah, I do like I can have two scout rifles if I wanted. Seems quite, quite.
Well,
it gives you a bit more options for loadout, I think, heading into some of the, when you're thinking about Nightfall strikes and that and trying to optimize how you want to go into those, I think it gives you a few more options as a player.
I like how there are clear use cases for all the different weapons. I like how, energy weapons pull down shields, and if it's the matching energy weapon to the shield, it will proc off of the shield and cause like a damage explosion, which has AOE as well as doing damage to that main target. I like that. There's still loads of customization with the weapons, even though they've removed leveling. You can change the energy weapons, energy types. You can switch an arc for a flame, wherever it is, to avoid and stuff like that. So you can do all kinds of stuff like that. The only thing I'm missing, guys, is I've got no more Sunsinger Warlock class, which is a little bit upsetting because how I used to play was I'd get my special and we'd be doing hard strikes. And then, you know, when everybody else wiped, I'd res myself, save my team and be the hero. And I can't do that anymore because they got rid of that class. A little bit sad. Now move I throw on. Swords instead.
Move on. Just let it go. Living in the past.
Well, you'll be missing it as well when you fuckers wipe on a strike with me. And you'll be like, well, save us, Ben. And I'll be like, I can't do it. I don't have the power. Yes. So other things that don't have the power, here we go, would be Rachel from Life is Strange. You can't turn back time like Chloe did, if I remember rightly.
Oh, but she can be a snarky bitch, though, which is almost as good, isn't it?
How's it going? I mean, right. Richard is reviewing Life is Strange Before the Storm, episode one. He's also going to be looking at subsequent episodes as well. He's a big fan of the first Life is Strange. How's Before the Storm holding up for you?
I really like the first series, and a lot of it rested on that time travel mechanic or rewinding time. The whole thing about that as a sort of shoot off from Telltale's format of introducing a load of characters, you let you talk to them and you can choose how you treat them, and those choices have consequences. With Life is Strange, that mixed that up a bit, and you could see the consequence before having to commit to it. You could rewind through the conversation and go a different route if you wanted to. And that was strange. It did, in some cases, it made you feel as if there weren't really any consequences because you could just back out. But it did make it more interesting. And I think that having moved on to this prequel now, it is a prequel rather than a sequel, and having that ability stripped out, it's lost a lot of what it was, I think. What it's been replaced with now, because you're playing Chloe, who was the friend of Max was the protagonist in the first game. Chloe doesn't have this time travel ability thing. What they've replaced it with is her just being rude to people, and it's a really, really weird system. You have this thing where if you want to win an argument with someone, you've got your usual dialogue choices, and then this option to, I can't remember what they call it, but to
slap a bitch.
There's something about just like having a pop at them or something, right? So you choose this option, and the idea is you listen to what the other person says, and then you repeat some of those words in a sarcastic, snarky way with some sort of ostensibly snappy comeback that will make them think, oh my God, I can't handle this conversation. Let's give her whatever she wants. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So the first time this happens, the first scene of the game is Chloe trying to go to this almost illegal like gig. Like, there's this band playing in this abandoned old mill. And she's trying to get her way in. There's a bouncer on the door and he knows she's a kid, but she wants to get in anyway. So her way around this is to tell him what a girly is and how what a girly looking motorbike he's got with flower pictures on it. And he's like, oh my God, you're tough. You can go in if you want. And what? this is instead of time travel, is it?
It's how bouncers work. Just insult their manlyhood and then you'll just get in every time. Works for me.
So I get that they've been forced into doing this. It feels like they've committed to doing more content.
It's not the same developer, Rich.
No, I mean, as a publisher, they've seen that they want to do another game. But it doesn't really make a lot of sense that they're doing it the way that they are. It has to be a prequel because we know what happened in the original game. I don't feel that taking the abilities away from the original game really works in this.
Okay, how's the writing? How are the characters? Beyond the fact that we don't like the sort of lessening of the mechanical depth by taking out that particular gameplay mechanic, you know, how's the rest of it? Like, does it hold up? Does it feel legit? Do they feel human, or does it feel like what it is, 40-year-old guys writing teenage girls' dialogues?
To a point, it's fine. The first half an hour is terrible. It feels like exactly the first episode of the original Life is Strange felt. It felt self-aware.
That's why I bounced off of it, yeah. I couldn't.
Yeah, too self-conscious and keen to use what it thought were the tropes of a 16-year-old girl or whatever age they are. It felt like it was trying too hard. This is the same, but only for the first half an hour until it gets some established relationships in there. When you're with Chloe on her own, she's awful to be around. It's just terrible. Everything she says is overly sarcastic. It feels like the voice actor has gone in there and been told, but be a teenage brat, just be a teenage brat. And it's the exact stereotype of that you would imagine. And there's no warmth there. There's nothing to relate to. But I suppose the further you get into the episode, and I say the first half an hour, the whole thing is probably about 2 hours, 2.5 hours long. Once you've got over that initial hump and she started to relate to some people, then it does get a lot better. And it makes you realize that first exposure to her is her defense mechanism. Anyone that does meet her thinks she's a dickhead. And it's only when you get under the surface that she's tolerable and actually quite warm. And yeah, I've enjoyed it so far. I'm not sure where it's going, because you might have picked up from the original, there was this element of mostly social interaction was the heart of it, and what it's like to be a teenager in high school with the problems that teenagers have. But there was a kind of supernatural element to it as well, and that's hinted at here too, but not to any great degree, so I'm not sure where that's going to go.
Okay.
It's kind of good so far. It just depends where it goes, I guess.
Now let's talk about this live on the podcast so people can understand the mechanics of it. I haven't really specified how I want coverage from this view. I mean, you're going to be looking at the whole season, so you know, I would suggest maybe waiting off on a score until the very end. Yeah. But I would love to hear more of your sort of fully ruminated upon thoughts about this particular episode, though. So I'd love to see some of that from you, because I can tell you're in an interesting place with it right now, because you're not quite sure.
I know I liked it. There are things that I definitely dislike about it, but I can't say I didn't enjoy it. I did.
You love nothing more than being a teenage girl. I understand. That 13 Reasons Why, I'm guessing you're big into Riverdale as well, probably. I feel like there's one trapped inside you, at least at the weekends. He's got nothing now. Do you know what else is strange? You ready for this? After like nearly 20 years, we've got a really good Sonic game. We talked about this last time, but Joel's also been playing it this time on Xbox compared to me and Richard on Switch, because he's going to do us a review for it on Xbox. And you don't have like a crazy affinity for Sonic, do you, Joel?
I wouldn't say a crazy affinity. It was when I was a child, I had a Game Gear, and I played the Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic Chaos on that quite a lot. In fact, the original Sonic the Hedgehog on that. Also had a Mega Drive with Sonic the Hedgehog as well. So I did play a lot with Sonic when I was a child, and I did like, I used to like him very much back then, actually. I used to draw pictures of Sonic at school and on my
Were they online? Did you do any OC Sonic characters?
This was before the internet, Ben. This is back in the age of pen and paper.
Can you draw me one now?
Before keyboards, I guess, because I could actually handwrite back then. Let's get straight to it. I really like the philosophy of the approach of this game. So it starts you off with a complete virtual carbon copy of the first level from Sonic the Hedgehog on the Mega Drive. And from there, it sort of, as you progress through the game, it subtly evolves with new content. I enjoy that aspect. I love that very familiar initial feeling that you get from playing the game and rushing through the first couple of levels. And then the differences start eking in. You notice that the the soundtrack remixes. So it's the same overall tune, but sort of remixed into a more modern thing. I really liked that aspect of it, as well as the levels then get a bit different. It's kind of, so you don't really, I couldn't really tell per se that, you know, the level two is different and how it went on. And, then I am sort of harked back to certain elements of the game that I really just never really ever enjoyed. I don't think those special stages just feel so much like technical demos of the era that they came from that they don't really work anymore. I don't think
they lent into them way too hard. There's way too many of them. Every checkpoint has got one and it's just like, no, I don't want to do this again.
Those bloody blue balls, I just hated those. I even hated those on the Mega Drive. It was just so crap, and it still is awful. I think it shows both the good and the bad of Sonic. For a hardcore Sonic the Hedgehog fan, or anyone who grew up with Sonic that really is looking for something to go back and play that captures the, you know, that feels like Sonic did back then, this is perfect. It's got that solid foundations, and it's got some new subtleties as well, which make it kind of interesting that you can, it becomes kind of a game of spot the difference in certain places. You're sitting there, you know, there's so much familiar, but there are subtle differences and you're spotting them in your head and you feel kind of, oh yes, yeah, that's different. It sort of takes you back and brings forward some of those memories that, you know, deep down in your head. But for the newer fan, I kind of find myself, and this is a problem I kind of suffer with a lot of these old remakes of games and things, that I start playing them and I really enjoy them for about 30, 40 minutes, maybe an hour or so, and then it begins to wear on me. I don't find the gameplay as engaging. I think it's just because the things have moved on. I've been through that era. Back then I played those games and I played them to death. And then we moved up to the kind of N64, 3D, PlayStation era, and I played those games, and they were all great. They were all great games of their time, and some of them just don't age well. Some do. Some of the times the gameplay is just so good they can stand up. But yeah, personally for me, I find myself, not being able to engage, not wanting to see the whole experience through, if you know what I mean. It's, I play that hour, I enjoy it, and then I kind of wane off and I start thinking about other games that I've got at the moment that I want to be playing instead. So, and then the other aspect I wonder is there enough here? So for somebody who didn't grow up back then, never went through playing Sonic games or Mario games, or was a millennial per se, is there enough in this game to sort of convey what, when we all talk about Sonic, what we, you know, and we talk, explain to people, oh, you probably wouldn't understand because you were there. Was there enough in this game to... So for someone curious enough to wonder what all the older generation per se are all talking about, what all the fuss was about, is there enough here for them to go back and sort of answer some of those questions, so they can experience for themselves? I think in some aspects, yes. I think it's the best, most fairest representation of what the gaming was like then. But is it sticky enough? Is the gameplay good enough for somebody to want to see it all the way through and play and enjoy it as much as we all did back then?
I feel like Mania is, the difference with Mania is that it's not just a rehash though, is it? There's lots of new.
No, you're right. Every now and again, you're playing and then it throws something in. You're just like,
Have you played Puyo Puyo yet?
Nah, I got to the Mean Bean Machine, which I had to laugh at.
That made me laugh. Yeah, that was a boss fight, and it was just like, pretty sure they never did that before. Yeah, so there's some great. I love how they're doing the remixes on the zones that like you said, you have your kind of classic take and then you get the modernized, let's bring in mechanics that are a bit more up to date and creative and stuff you wouldn't have seen back then. And it's almost like it's going, well, this is what it was and this is what it is. Mm. And it's just like, here are the two sort of halves of this thing. I think it's a pretty genius product. I know me and Richard, I haven't had a time to put much more into it, but it's really cool, isn't it, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, I still haven't gone back to finish it properly with the crystals and all that, the Chaos Emeralds, but I have finished the game, and I was really, really impressed with it. I think it does enough to evoke nostalgia in people that were there first time, because it's got those rehashes of the original levels, but by mixing those up in the second acts as well, it is saying to the modern gamer, this is what make Sonic relevant now. This is contemporary gameplay. It works today. It's not just a nostalgia fest. So yeah, I thought it worked on all levels for all players. It was good.
You know what makes Mario relevant now?
Mm-hmm.
You give him a fucking gun. And it's like, brat, brat, motherfucker. Brat, brat. He's just swinging around, killing them rabbits, capping them in their ugly little faces.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle on the Nintendo Switch. Richard, you've not played this. I thought you would have got this. No. Not your jam? Not interested?
I kind of would have had a go, but I'm not going to spend 50 quid on it in the month that I've bought Destiny for 70 and whatever else I've bought.
No, that's fair enough. Me and Joel have been having a go at this, though. And yeah, this is XCOM with Mario and Rabbids, and it is altogether far too pretty and far too charming than it has any fucking right to be. And also a really solid tactical RPG, like really, really solid. It plays very, very well. I love the mobility. Like, I'm a big fan of XCOM. And this has obvious like connections to it, but there's things like in your movement turn, you can slide tackle an enemy, and then you can like jump off of another character, and then you could land a butt stomp if you're Mario, and then you get into position, and then you can shoot someone. And it's just like, oh my God, there's so many options here. And it's like the puzzle pieces are so varied and interesting, and the world is so pretty. Plus, Mario with guns, strangely, works really well. Do you know what I found out today? Can you guys, it's a Ubisoft joint, can you guys guess, if you have seen the news story, don't spoil it, but can you guys guess what engine at Ubisoft this game has been made off of?
I already know the answer to it.
I have seen it. Yeah.
You have seen it. The fucking Division. This is the Division Snowdrop, isn't it? Snowdrop. And it's like, what? Well, I guess that explains why it's so goddamn gorgeous. But like, that's a very strange mixture of properties that I never expected. But then again, I never expected Ubisoft to be developing a Mario game until this was announced at E3 and then, you know, quite quickly released. I think everybody's loving this game. I've only heard positive things about it. And Richard, when you do get some time, if you find something a bit different, I do recommend it. Though I know you're not a big turn-based guy after like the Masquerade game.
Well, I liked XCOM. So if it's anything like that, I'm sure I'd enjoy it.
It's like XCOM, but with humor and more mobility. That's my main
thing. I don't spend that much money on it. It's expensive, isn't it?
Well, it's got Mario in it, and I've never heard of a cheap Mario game ever. No. I'm only at the end of World 1. I've again not had enough time to put into it in the last couple of weeks. Joel, you're further in. Where are you at with it?
So I'm halfway through World 2, so I'm not dramatically further than you, but I have tried a few of the other bits. I played multiplayer on it as well, which probably didn't need to be there, to be honest. It's not even really multiplayer. It's kind of a local co-op mode. You can't play it, you like, on two different switches. You have to play on the same switch. Each of you takes one of the Joy-Cons and controls two characters, basically. It's a bit... You could play it by yourself.
It's cooperative?
Yeah. You play on the same side. You don't play competitively against enemies. And it's just... I don't think it needed to be there. They could have just got rid of it and just put the levels in as like challenge levels or something, or, you know, added them to the rest of the challenge pool. I think you're right in identifying. It's amazing how this is, you know, it's amazing that Ubisoft made it. I'm assuming that Nintendo have had a lot of supervision and input into the whole look and feel as it's gone on.
I've been reading about this. They took the Mario with Blaster concept to Miyamoto, and he was just like, yeah. And then they basically made it. They were given, you know, I mean, actually they had guidelines, but no, Nintendo weren't breathing down their necks while I was reading.
It's amazing. I love the subtle little animations, the details, the world. It looks so pretty. It feels 100% like a Nintendo game. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the only obvious outfit is all the rabbits everywhere that give it away. What I really liked is the intro, how it actually tries to put some explanation to how this scenario where these two sets of characters have come from. I thought it was really good.
Okay. It's like a chick invents a VR set that isn't a VR set and it can like combine things. And then the rabbits show up in a time traveling washing machine, fuck up her lab. steal the set and just start like making everything get combined.
Her lab is obviously, as well as being an inventor, she's a massive Mario fan. So her lab is full of Mario memorabilia, posters, and this. And this is how the rabbits are all combined with all this stuff from all these memorabilia and things. And then go, I didn't expect that. I just literally thought there wouldn't be any explanation. I thought they'd just throw it together.
It's not exactly necessary because even with it, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Nice. It's a nice touch, I thought. You're right. I guess you're right. It wasn't necessary for the game, and hence that's why it surprised me when it started off.
I mean, like everything else, it looked stunning. Like, it's the first time I've liked the rabbits in anything. Like, this, it's like what they were designed for. It's perfect. It's a perfect mishmash of the two properties. They just work so, and it's so funny in places. And the weird thing is, you don't play as Mario or Luigi or a rabbit. You play as this Roomba, which is the only way of describing it. It's a little robot that goes around and does all the talking in the game, actually, almost all of it. And it's like all the dialogue seems to come from the Roomba, and then the bit with Peach. But yeah, the other characters don't speak a lot, at least not so far for myself. So that's a bit strange that you don't actually play as any of the characters, but once I got the hang of that, that was okay as well. It just works, doesn't it, Joel? I mean, it's if you've played XCOM, you have a very good idea of how the game plays. So I don't feel like you need to explain that too much. But there's a lot less RNG in this. Basically, you have three stages of cover: no cover, 50% cover, 100% cover. Right. So if they've not got any cover, you will guarantee a hit. If they're 100% cover, you will guarantee a miss. And if it's 50% cover, it's a flip of a coin. Unlike XCOM, where you've got all the minute, somewhat irrelevant percentages, if you think about it, this is much more binary, easy to understand. But don't get me wrong, this game will challenge you. These combat scenarios are not easy. There is an easy mode for every combat scenario, which will give you more health, but they are actually quite tough. And you get basically each combat scenario, there's like two or three for each section, and you carry over your health between those combats. So you have to manage somebody. If he's taking, like Mario's taking a lot of hits, you then get into the next fight with only maybe enough to take one hit off of an enemy. So you have to play bearing that in mind. And you want to end up trying to beat each combat scenario with a perfect score, which means under the turn limit and with all three characters surviving. There's some real challenge, and like you're gonna go back and like optimize your play styles on ones you don't do as well on.
It's deeply strategical. It's really cool. That's what I love about it. I love playing a battle, getting near the end, and thinking, no, I'm gonna restart this battle. I'm gonna do better. I love it. I love that, like you described, the synergies and the skills you unlock between the characters, the ability to dash and stuff. Just optimizing your strategy and each making the most of each turn is
addictive. Do you kick yourself when you fuck up and you're like, oh my God, why did I just move that character first? Because I should have moved that character into position so I could have jumped off that character and then done a stomp on that character and then moved into cover there. Oh, restart.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very, very good.
I have a couple of little gripes I've come across so far. The camera can be a little bit irritating in places. Sometimes they lock it in a certain position, which is a bit frustrating.
Isn't that just when you're walking around the overworld?
It is, but it also, I don't know if you've done the final battle of the first world.
No,
I haven't finished the first world. Yeah, I think the camera is there specifically trying to do something to try and, I think what it makes it easier, but it kind of makes it a bit difficult to see around some of the blocks and things like that. Okay. So they put it at like a more shallow angle. I found that quite irritating. I'd much prefer a bit more freedom of control on the camera.
The camera thing in combat is that it's exactly the same as XCOM for the most part, where it's you have the four views, don't you, on the four points.
You can rotate it 90 degrees. A bit more freedom in rotation. It's not the rotation aspect. It's like in this one, it's the elevation. To be able to elevate the camera a bit more up and down at different points so you can see would be nicer. But other than that, I think it's very accessible. It gives you a lot of information. Like when you're analyzing a square to move your character there, all the percentages of chances to hit the enemies from those bits, and if you've got line of sight from that square that you want to move to are highlighted and things. It's very, very detailed in that way. I'm very much enjoying it. I've been playing a lot of it actually because I've been traveling a bit around and the Switch is just perfect for those scenarios. So yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, that's when I played it on the train to and from London over the last few days. I think it's a real impressive gem. And I hope that means we're going to see more Nintendo properties being developed by studios you wouldn't expect, in directions you wouldn't expect. I think that could be a really exciting prospect for all those amazing licenses and amazing properties. Who knows? Who knows? I hope, hopefully this has proven to Nintendo that it really can work. Okay. I just want to quickly name check a game that I was able to play that Joel obviously talked about a lot last week or 2 weeks ago and has a review, and that's Halcyon 6. It is as good as Joel says. I've so far enjoyed my time with it. I had that. I have, again, not played as much as I want, but I'm going to put some more time into it. This game has that brilliant sense of the you can't onboard, I don't think, onto a game like this without some confusion, but it's that wonderful confusion of choice that is given to you by an expansive 4X type game, where, especially with this game, which has got some really interesting systems and mechanics that I haven't seen before, like, you know, the officer stuff Joel was talking about. And yeah, I'm just like, oh, I'm going to sink so much time into this. That feeling of just, I'm going to learn the shit out of this and I'm going to kick ass. Yeah, and I love how it looks, and it seems to play really well, run really well on my not so great system. So I'm definitely going to talk about that next time, hopefully when I've had more time to play it. But who knows? There's so many fucking games. I do, however, want to hear from you both before we go on a couple of games. Joel, I want to hear about the end of Horizon Zero Dawn. No spoilers, please, because I haven't finished it.
So this is, I don't normally do too well with open world games, I guess I'll say. What the problem is, it's not that I don't enjoy them. It's just that I wear them out in some senses. Like, there's just too much to do, and there's not enough variety in the game. So what I tend to, you know, think of like Grand Theft Auto 5, for example. I'll play it, I'll put about 12 or 15 hours into it, but then I just switch off, I get bored of it. It doesn't keep me engaged enough. And, you know, Fallout, Elder Scrolls games, I don't think I've ever completed one. They're just so sort of overwhelmed by choice, but then everything you get to do in the game is so, you know, so samey and stuff. So now Horizon is, on the open world aspect, is identical to that, I would say. It's not got masses of variety per se, but what it has got is it's got a story that could completely engross me. Both from the sort of, you've got this environment with post-apocalypse and, you know, filled with these mysterious machines, and I really want to know what's going on, where this all come from. And then you've got your main character as well, who's got this sort of uncertainty about her and things. And then just as you play through the main story missions, just the way that all develops and stuff, just get me completely engrossed. So I finally finished it. It's I think it made it very easy to focus on the main story and ignore everything else. You realize just how periphery all the sort of side missions are. They don't have any bearing on anything else, really. They're just there for extra content. So I purely kind of concentrated on the main story. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. The combat, I really thought, was very good in the game as well. I really enjoyed the challenge of battling these machines, but knocking bits off them. And sort of switching up the weapons you're using to try and maximize the vulnerabilities of certain parts of these machines and things. Yeah, really, really, really loved it. I'm looking so forward to the DLC for this now as well.
See, when I hear people talk about Ages of Mayhem, I just start thinking about, Game of the Year. Not Ages of Mayhem, sorry, Horizon Zero Dawn. I start thinking about, Game of the Year contenders. And that's where my brain is going on that. I'm starting to already think about things like that.
I think it will be on my list. I don't know if it will be my game of the year per se, but it's definitely worthy of discussion when we get to that point.
And Richard, I would like to hear your thoughts on what probably won't be a game of the year contender. We said that Freudian slip that happened a moment ago. It's very telling. However, I enjoyed my time with this, though I seem to be in the minority. So I'm curious to see, I don't know how much you've played, how much time you've been able to carve out for it, but where are you at with Agents of Mayhem? How are you feeling about it?
I've not played too much, maybe half an hour.
But oh, right, okay, right. So none at all, really, then. Okay, that's...
I don't know. I feel like I've...
Are you even out of the tutorial?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. If I remember rightly, it has a pretty slow start. It's all in that kind of dungeon environment, isn't it? The tutorial?
I'm out into the city.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not liking it so far. I mean, just on the mechanical level, it feels so old. I mean, while I was thinking that, I was thinking, well, actually, it feels a little bit like Crackdown, so that doesn't
yeah.
for Crackdown 3.
I mean, that's what I talked about a lot in my review, is that I felt like this is kind of come and eaten Crackdown's lunch before it was released, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Crackdown, I forgave it that because it was so much fun to blow everything up and jump up the towers and whatever, but this doesn't really feel as much fun. Maybe it's the characters that are really putting me off, because I've never been a fan of the Saints Row games, because it does have this irreverent tone that just shouts, aren't I funny? But no, you're not, mate. Sorry. If you tell me you are, I'm not going to buy it. And that's just how I feel with Agents of Mayhem. It just feels like it's trying hard and I can't get into it.
I think one of the problems it has is that the best characters aren't the ones you start with. The three characters you get at the beginning are actually quite weak. They're most probably the most generic ones. I like the girl out of those three, but the two guys are really boring. There are quite a lot of characters to unlock in Agents of Mayhem, and some of them are absolutely brilliant. Some of the best representations of women I've seen in video games in a really, really long time. The writing is inconsistent. I don't think it's universally bad. I don't know if you listened to my review, but there's some somewhat unfortunate moments of dialogue to do with that reference recent terrorist attacks unintentionally that made me go, oh, maybe should have cut that bit. Like, yeah. Referencing stealing a vehicle and running it into people. Maybe not right now. Like, yeah, just a thought. I really dug it, man. But the difference being, I really like Saints Row. I'd actually go as far as saying I prefer Saints Row to GTA. That's so yeah, I know.
GTA. I don't Nobody even really like GTA. I think mechanically that's quite weak as well. And I know that's not fashionable to say so, but I've never been a big fan of. Well, I suppose what I was when it was on PS2. I don't feel like it's really evolved much beyond the PS2 games.
So the question here, you're talking about, yeah, these things feeling old and dated. Yeah. What's a modern open world game for you that feels like, you know, something that right now?
Well, I think the interactions have to feel like they would in a smaller scale game. There is no reason now why an open world game has to compromise on how you behave within it. I mean, it used to be the case that because a world is big, that is enough. And it didn't matter that you were quite limited to how you could act within that. Like, there'd be no open buildings, or you couldn't really climb anything, and you'd just be bouncing off invisible walls, maybe. Mm.
I know what you're talking about Zelda. You're talking about Zelda, yeah? Basically, Zelda is the gold standard for open worlds right now, yeah?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you couldn't look at Zelda Breath of the Wild and say, well, yes, they've made the world bigger, but he doesn't control as well anymore. He controls as well as you would expect in a much more narrow, linear game. And that's what I'd expect from any game now, that I don't feel there's a need to compromise on that interactivity. And with Agents of Mayhem, immediately I felt I was hemmed in. Just in terms of what I was able to do with the controls, but also visually, the camera angle, for instance, the position of the camera behind the character just does not work as a third-person shooter.
I didn't have any issues with that. Okay.
I just couldn't get to grips with it at all, particularly when you're trying to turn around and aim. It just felt like my character was in the way of my aiming, and it was just not lined up enough for me to feel like it was natural.
Okay.
I was wrestling with it more than enjoying it.
This is the thing, though. This is why I like Joel, you got a copy as well, didn't you?
I haven't had a chance to play it yet. I've literally been bombed with Epic Games or yes. huge games to play like in the past 2 weeks. I seriously just need to like build a time machine or something like that.
Some kind of like a loop. You need to create
an 8-day week would be handy.
Create a time loop where you can just relive the same sort of hour over and over and over again, but like it freezes it for everybody else, but you just get to play video games for 3 days or something like that. Mm. That would be ideal, wouldn't it? I think we can all relate to that that problem. So like that brings us towards the end of the show here, I think. There's going to be reviews coming for Destiny, Life is Strange, Sonic. I know Joel's working on Escapists. Richard, I think I've got some more for you when you're done with Life is Strange. But I'm really looking forward to seeing your words on that and stuff, and your words on Sonic. Joel. And yes, it's only going to get busier, guys. It's only going to get busier. Just so you know. I've got Madden coming as well. I'll be doing a Madden review, mostly looking just at the story mode. And yeah, that lots. I think we've got like start of next month is the Lord of the Rings game, Shadow of War. And then I think it just goes Assassin's Creed, the new Mario, that fucking millions of games, mm-hmm. constant games. So yes, make sure you stay tuned to bxbgames.co.uk and also on iTunes. Please subscribe to us there and on Twitter at bxbgames and Facebook at bxbgames. And by all means, come and join our clan for Destiny at BXB Games. We welcome that. There are now rewards in-game for clan participation. So it's worth actually doing that, unlike the first game, which didn't really matter for shit. So that's really cool. Another one of the nice new tweaks they've done. And yeah, I'm at DIYE on Twitter. Richard's at Colonel Red. Joel doesn't exist. And that brings us to the end of the 31st episode of BXB's Bits and Bobs. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.